Tracy's on. Turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time with Stacey's on.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Stacey.
Yes.
There has been a lot. Well, it's been actually exclusively discussion, not just on the sports side. The news side has been distracted by all of this Russell Wilson conversation.
Checks out.
It is the perfect time of year to have that because there really is not a whole lot else going on. The Mariners are not yet into their season. They haven't hit their May swoon yet. So we've got time. And when we have time, well, what we're paid to do is to yap.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, we have to discuss something that has become, I think, critically important to the planet.
Earth.
Exactly. I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And the issue is when you don't have enough in your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to, I mean, there are people who do this, they, you know, various forms of, you know, they're on going on websites or they're doing, you know, they're trying to find some way to fill the emptiness in their lives. Self-help books. That's a good way to do it.
Huge industry.
I was thinking about this the other day because I was looking also for something to fill my life with and I didn't know where I could turn. And I thought, you know, who I go to for advice like this 150% of the time is Stacey, because Stacey seems to have a very full, rich existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so Stacey, to fill that emptiness in my life, even if it is just for short term, what should I do?
Again, this is just my own personal suggestion from my experience. So there are ways to find fulfillment that come from all kinds of places. For me, it's been Star Rentals.
Really?
I mean, really rentals of any kind. There's Rent the Runway, which is a company where you can rent dresses or designer pieces. But then you have the anxiety of knowing if I spill something on this white $1,000 designer dress renting for $50 a day.
It's no longer a rental.
It's no longer a rental.
It's an owner.
It's an owner. And I am exceptionally nervous about this.
Right.
What if I fall in love with it and I realize I want it, but I can't afford it?
Yeah.
Then it just breaks my heart.
When I was still in the dating world, that happened to me all the time.
That's exactly right. Tinder. Kind of another form of Star Rentals.
Very much.
In that you don't want to commit to a relationship with something.
Right.
But you maybe just want to test the waters, figure yourself out.
You got a home repair you need.
And you know what I mean? You don't want to decide to become a repair person.
Oh.
And because you're not a repair person, you don't have a forklift.
Right.
You don't have a snow lift. You don't have a power lift. You don't have a facelift.
What on earth is it?
I know. I feel like there's a lot of lifts out there.
And you know where you go for a lift.
You go to Star Rentals.
Which is where we started this whole thing. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, something to lift me up.
Coincidentally.
Right.
Unrelated. Star Rentals is the sponsor for Seattle Sports at Night.
That's good.
Which is where we are right now.
Which is why we're talking about.
They are also the preferred supplier to the West Best Contractors and, quite frankly, us.
And the West Best Contractors, I think we can say with some certainty, do not have empty lives.
No. So that's why it's interesting you say that, because Star Rentals also is kind of the preferred supplier in a weird way to all of us.
Right. Really?
Yeah. Depending on if you're looking for an emotional support. If you find emotional fulfillment from contracting equipment.
Right. Yeah.
Perfect.
Then that's where you go.
Yep.
All right.
So,
and I'm not certain that the fact that Star Rentals is the sponsor of Seattle Sports at Night is anything that is mentioned in Russell Wilson's contract.
No.
It may be. I don't know. I've
perhaps.
Never seen it. It perhaps. But I will say this.
They're everywhere.
It has been weirder and weirder at every point. And this is where I can go on the long, long list of the many things I've been wrong about. No one wants a camera in their cell phone.
Two. You said no one wants a camera in their cell phone? When was this? Like 1989? When did cell phones come out?
It was probably like 1993 when I said that. I said, this is completely ridiculous.
What do you need a camera in your phone for? You just need it for sending a T9 text message.
I had a long public argument in a newsroom about this.
Oh, my God.
This was not long after
what a bad take.
My argument about, I just can't see a 24-hour sports network making it in this country.
What's wrong with your opinions?
Don't know.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
They're so bad.
So, I don't understand. I've been wrong at every stage of this. I thought, all right, Russ Wilson was having a bad day or maybe a beer or two and popped off about, does he have a beer or two?
I feel like it would be a light beer, like an MGD 64.
Oh, no, he would be, is that the, no. What's the one that's Michelob Ultra? Have you ever had a Michelob Ultra?
No.
It tastes like Evian. It is like literally as beer free as something claiming to be beer could be. It is awful.
Do we think he would be
seltzer water?
I was going to say seltzer, and I will not disparage seltzer because I'm part of the seltzer community.
You are definitely a
supporter
white
of seltzer, seltzer water, 1,000%.
Right. I know. You look like one. What flavor?
Is that a compliment? Primary flavor, watermelon, followed by black cherry, followed by mango.
So you're a truly and a White Claw person then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make more sense. No, I'm not going to say whether it's going to be.
I won't apologize.
You shouldn't. And nor should Russell Wilson. But I was thinking that he had a couple of seltzers. He starts talking about getting beat up a lot and getting hit a lot, hit too many times. You did choose that profession. But nonetheless, you're getting hit a lot. He wants improvements where improvements aren't happening. I thought, all right, Russell's going to say this thing. We're going to, it gives us something to talk about. It's going to blow up a little bit and it's going to, blah, blah, blah.
Nope.
No, it just keeps getting bigger. And at every turn, I kept saying, it's going to die out by tomorrow. We're going to need to find something new to talk about. Now his agent has done what, Stacey?
His agent, Michael, reached out to... Can I just sidebar? This is related, but it's like the preface I want to say leading up to this. Mm-hmm. That there are still people, whether it's texting us, whether it's friends that I hear about, whether it's just internet comments, which you can always look for a trustworthy opinion there, that have a hard time believing that any of this is real, they think it's all fake, like all made up. And look, no one outside of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson know all the details of this relationship, but Russell Wilson's agent himself reached out to Adam Schefter.
A guy who what you would assume is in regular contact with Russell Wilson.
A representative of Russell Wilson, who does nothing without Russell Wilson's knowledge, reached out to Adam Schefter and said, look, Russell Wilson, he's not demanding a trade, but if he were to be traded, here are four teams he'd be willing to go to. I'm just going to throw some names out there. Bears, Raiders, Cowboys, and Saints. Just an idea of where he'd want to go.
It's G. Scott. So I was on G and Ursula earlier, and this was one of, they have a section called Agree to Disagree.
Okay.
We should actually, in fact, I'm going to ask you to go on, because they actually sometimes bring in another person. You are so perfect for this.
Oh, yes.
I am going to get you on the show. But one of the questions was, should Russell Wilson be traded? Both G and Ursula said yes. And they said yes. G's example, which we then, spent a little time sort of stretching and torturing into oblivion. But he essentially said it is that Russell Wilson essentially has done this. He has gone to his wife and he said, I don't want a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to get a divorce, here are your top four best friends who I would actually want to have a relationship
with. He upped
with.
The stakes is what he did. This isn't squashing anything. Right. Like in theory, this is what's kind of annoying about it to so many people. In theory, he could write it off as like, oh, I'm just going up there to clarify that I'm not requesting a trade. What you're doing, though, by putting out the information about those four teams is saying, but I'm very much open to one. And here are the places that I've thought about going.
And then the funny thing is, like, and I'm a fan. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
Along with, my love for the Tampa Bay team.
That is a lifetime. That's different. That's a different kind of love.
That's more vocational.
Family.
Yeah. But I'm a Raiders fan. And he put the Raiders on the list. And I was like, that's odd. I wouldn't pick the Raiders.
You know what's so funny?
I love the Raiders. Listen. And I wouldn't pick the Raiders.
I went on SB Nation. By the way, I can't recommend these enough. They have SB Nation blogs, community blogs, where you have like local writers. So they're not like official, like the Seattle Times reporters, but like legit, they're great blogs. I enjoy them. There's a... Field Goals is the local one, and I think Windy City Gridiron is the Chicago one. So when the Russell Wilson report came out that he'd be interested in the Bears, I went to that one and I clicked on the article, and the comments from fans are like, does he know? Are you sure that he said the Bears? These are Bears fans that are like, okay, but is he now, are we serious about this? Are you sure he said Bears and not another team, potentially? Bengals, maybe. Like, you're positive he meant Chicago Bears. So the agent upping the stakes. And the longer this goes on, Mike, the less confident I feel that it'll get resolved. And we've talked to experts today. We had ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson on. Obviously, I work with Jake Heaps, who is Russell Wilson's private quarterback coach. We had Michael Bumpus on, who's a former Seahawks player, part of the Seahawks pre and post game show. All three of those guys are like, I think it'll get figured out. I'm concerned. This is concerning. The fact that it's public is concerning.
Right.
We
For
think
a guy
it's
who's
get
famously
out,
not public.
Think it's going to get figured out because of the difficulties of doing a trade where Russell Wilson would both want to go and the Seahawks would like what they could get in return.
And the cap hit on the Seahawks. There's all kinds of
other things at play.
I think it feels to me like, you know, when I would imagine my mom and dad talked about this, my two older brothers, when they were kids, would get in fights with each other, wrestling fights and whatnot. And my dad said, like, early on, you're separating them. And then at some point, you kind of just look and you're like, let them fight it out. Because they're kids anyway. And they would actually just, like, wear themselves out. And they'd be playing together later on. Because they genuinely, you know, generally got along well. But they're brothers nearly at the same age. And I feel like at some point, that's kind of what coaches look at. They see it in practice, those dust up and those fights. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the fight is indicative of just too much energy and a little anxiety, and sometimes
it's indicative. Kind of fights.
Bingo. And so I feel like maybe what they're saying, maybe Jake Michael Bumpus are saying this, is that they need to have their
friction.
You know, friction, blow off some steam. There really isn't another resolution to this except Russell Wilson playing quarterback for the Seahawks, which I still think is likely true. I don't know how the Seahawks possibly get any better. They just have to figure out this whole idea about, because he needs to push his heart. If he's genuinely worried about this legacy idea, you know, he's got to push as hard as he can to let them know he's unhappy, and he's got to do it now.
Yeah.
So in the future, when this next season,
because it takes a while to build,
when they're running the ball 45 times a
exactly.
game, that he has now, he's got the grounding for his unhappiness, and now can really sort of move the levers in a more aggressive way.
So there's one half of me, when I was telling this to Jake, I was like, look, being someone who was a reporter and tried very purposefully to detach myself from the team, there are two ways that I always look at it. And if you don't detach yourself from the team, your job just gets too emotional, because then you tie your job to the success of something you can't control, which is the performance of a team, and it stresses you out. So I was like, look, as a football fan, as someone who enjoys covering this team and enjoys when this team succeeds, because it makes my job, frankly, just more fun. It's easier to have more energy and get fans excited. It's stressful because it is a very real possibility that Russell Wilson is not here next year.
Right.
As a reporter, taking a bird's eye view and stepping back, it is a much more fascinating story about the NFL as a business, which I'm telling you something you already know, but I think as fans, we experience the NFL in moments.
Right.
So we experience the NFL in games. Sundays, we sit down. Maybe we see news throughout the week, but we sit down on Sunday. We see these guys. They make plays that make them heroes to us, or they mess everything up and then take fault and embrace the loss in ways that kind of make us say, like, wow, that was such a graceful way of handling it, what have you. And there are tenets of football that we celebrate with all this, right?
Right.
Football culture in general and the sport itself celebrates selflessness, teamwork, kind of grit, grinding it out, physicality, sacrifice, etc. Yeah. The actual business of the NFL is in a constant juxtaposition with all of those things.
Right.
The business of the NFL is selfish.
Right.
Is focused on, you succeed as a team, but players are also focused on their own independent success.
Well, and to your point, this is an excellent point. To your point, you're also focused on not just your own success, but on essentially on denying the success of someone who does your exact job.
Exactly. And it's tough. And
right.
I think that people are still figuring out how to humanize athletes when it comes to the career decisions that they're making or demands they're making or requests they're making or what have you. And there's all kind of layers to this, right? I say people still trying to figure it out with athletes. The layers there are complex.
Right.
It are people when it comes to how white fans might interpret the demands of a black athlete, right? Like there are layers to how people interpret all of this. When you look at Deshaun Watson and him wanting out of clearly a dysfunctional organization, reported upon multiple reputable outlets saying this place is lost.
Right.
This organization is drowning. Management and ownership does not know what it's doing. They're trading away stars. They are going to enter a rebuild and they are starting all over. Here is this quarterback in his prime saying, please let me out.
Right.
Can I go somewhere else? And people are calling him selfish and saying he's horrible and saying he doesn't understand. Meanwhile, you've got Carson Wentz in Philadelphia who just got paid, underperformed, and is saying, trade me. You don't hear nearly as much about it. So is it painted and in your face and obvious with that kind of stuff? No. But the business of the NFL, it's already tough for a lot of fans to swallow. And then there's added layers and context depending on who is being talked about as a professional player.
It's difficult because I think that some of those qualities, and you're raising a really good point, a few good points, the some of those qualities that we like because we love metaphor, right? We love to use,
yes.
We love to use football metaphor all the time. And then you have to look at this notion of, how can I put it? This idea that they are not looking, one, they're not looking at you in the same manner you're looking at them, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Two, that they are not, the way you judge yourself by your peers at work and the way somebody maybe who is way worse off than you thinks like, I would never complain if I had that job. You sometimes think about athletes like that because they're not judging themselves by the fact that they're making 20 times what you do annually. They're going to make more in 3 years if you're a star athlete than you will in your entire lifetime, right? They're looking at peers. They're simply looking at the people in their own field, in their own area.
Which
and
is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Multi-billion dollar industry. Exclusively owned by a set of billionaires,
right.
You know, all of whom are richer even than the league and the team.
Yes.
And so you have the situation where I don't mind the fact that they went out. It's hard, though, because you root for your community and you root for the teams within your community. And there's this incredibly strong bond when your team does well and you win a Super Bowl and like all the fun that happens therein. And you can't understand why they'd want to leave. And I don't know. I've always been pretty sympathetic. Like, I think they should worry about themselves. I think they should get the best possible circumstance. Yeah. Is it kind of pointless to argue, given the way the world is, between $30 million a year and $32 million a year? You know, I get it. It's ridiculous. You either best choose ignorance or learn to cope,
right?
Because that's the way it works. There's no way around that. And they don't look at it as money anymore. It's points.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Well, and sometimes it has nothing to do with the money, but instead has to do with, for instance, J.J. Watt pushing for his release in Houston. Yet another player who wants out of Houston and successfully got out of Houston is someone who I think people would say there. I mean, Houston was pretty sympathetic to him. He'd been a longtime fan favorite. But I think that there were still people saying, what are you complaining about? All you have to do is stay there and play and you get all this money. And as a side note, and this isn't for this conversation right now, I cannot stress how rare the set of skills are that NFL players have. It's like
totally.
Complaining about someone who makes more than you because they're doing some high level tech thing.
Right.
Maybe that's what you do. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to think about something that would be a hard skill to acquire.
Yeah, the worst player on the Seahawks is better than the best
than
athlete
anyone you know.
In your high school.
Exactly.
You know, or college.
A lot
probably.
Better.
A lot better.
Think
not
of the
a
most athletic
better.
Friend you have who isn't a professional athlete and times that by like 20.
Right. And then you get
that's
that.
A practice squad guy. So
well, and your J.J. Watt thing is a really interesting because look at two players in that team who tried to force their way out and look at the fundamental different reactions to both of them. J.J. Watt is hailed as like, thank you for 10 years of great service.
Yeah.
And the guy who's still under contract is getting whipsawed.
He is,
this.
Especially by people within Houston, but then outside of it also. And so anyways, it brought up this interesting conversation that we were having about Kurt Flood.
So, Stacey, not to interrupt.
Oh, we got a break.
We got a break. You want to come back after the commercial?
Let's do that.
All right, let's do that. All right, Stacey, because we were on a roll, you're back after the commercial. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
But it was not a Star Rental commercial. Do we have to re-up on their commercial if we re-up on the segment?
I am worried that if we draw attention to how much we talk about them, we'll fall into legal problems.
Fair enough. Showing favoritism and all. We're not providing that sort of
That's
balanced.
That's exactly right. Shout out to my Starbies.
Exactly. All right. So we were focusing on the sort of the different way people are treated when they want out.
So look, I am not drawing a comparison between Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson or any current player and Kurt Flood. I'm going to start by saying that.
Right.
Do not assume that I am drawing a direct comparison. I am not.
Okay.
Kurt Flood made a pretty substantial sacrifice by fighting for more control over his career as a player in a time when that was unheard of and at a time where there was very little sympathy for it, especially as a black player.
Right.
And especially as a black player who, for reasons that many white fans could not understand, did not want to be traded.
And for those of you who are not familiar with what's going on right now, former MLB player Kurt Flood, there is a push right now. In fact, I think Jemele Hill, some other people have written, should be in the Hall of Fame.
Fantastic piece.
Because literally we do not have free agency, and you may not like that, but we do not have free agency as it exists without him making that huge fight, which he lost in the 1970s. And now, I think appropriately, he absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. And on top of that, he was a really good ball player.
One of the biggest, really good ball player, one of the most monumental impacts on the sport.
Yeah, maybe as far as players go, maybe the monumental impact.
Now, the only reason that I, again, not drawing a comparison, but the only reason I mentioned Flood is looking at the way that the reaction people had to a, at the time, well-compensated athlete fighting for more control or for a say, or in any way at the time he likened his situation to slavery. And what he meant by it was, you're dictating exactly where I go. You're dictating the control that I have. I have no autonomy with my career. And he didn't want to be traded specifically to a team where there was a ton of racism in the city and fan base. He was like, I don't want to do this. And so the reaction he got, I think it is much better than players get now. There's still this like fundamental way that some fans treat players who advocate for control of their career. And I've always tried to kind of get down to the bottom of it. And I don't think there's one uniform reason why there's so much anger. Sometimes it is race. Sometimes it has nothing to do with race. And it's all a lack of kind of sympathy because of what someone's being compensated. Sometimes it's a player that has said something disparaging about a team and a fan of the team feels hurt and betrayed. I mean, there's all kinds of different reasons to it. One consistency is that you will find that advocating for yourself is not going to be the most popular thing among fans.
Nope. Because it's antithetical to this whole idea of team. And it is antithetical to the idea of team as most fans have participated in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is certainly not the antithetical to what a professional athlete understands. And it's honestly not all that different than what any top flight AAU basketball player knows, or anybody who is attending, you know, Eli Manning's football camp. The kids who are at that very, very peak, they start understanding the mercenary nature of this even before they get in. When they start getting on the recruitment train, they start understanding exactly what is. And when they're playing college sports in a time of COVID, and this is college sport, and there's a lot of money. So everyone, they get their education on professional sports even while they're in college. But the rest of us, we haven't dealt in that world much.
Well, and it's like comparisons are only drawn to players when it highlights like, oh, I get paid a fraction of what you make and I feel like I work really hard. And cool, like in general, if you're that person thinking that right now, I probably genuinely feel that you're underpaid.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be really honest with you. I probably think you're underpaid and deserve more money.
Almost every teacher in Washington State.
Exactly. Anything. I mean, like if you work whatever, construction, whatever, right. I'm probably going to agree with you and say, yeah, you deserve more. But one comparison that I thought, why don't people make that comparison more often is one you made just yesterday when we were talking about the reserve clause. The reserve clause, by the way, was abolished in baseball in, I think, 1975. But it was what Curt Flood was protesting at the time that essentially gave an organization exclusive control over you.
Your career, as a completely.
The explanation you made or the analogy you made was like, what was it? Imagine if you were at work and your boss had full sit, like that was the career you have forever.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and that's, and honestly, this is what this was. This goes back to when, you know, the you know, Carnegie was bringing in the Pinkertons to stop union movements and in steel factories. This is, I mean, and again, I get it. I understand that it doesn't feel the same because these are underpaid people and these are union. These are people making a lot of money. But the fact is, you should have, if you believe in individual rights, and you don't believe that those
labor rights.
That you don't believe that those rights should be commensurate with how much you get paid, but should be sacrosanct, that you should have rights. And I understand the need to keep players at a team at a certain time. I mean, that's continuity. It gives you something to root for. I understand the cultural thing. That's the trade-off. But the fact is, they should have, I don't, honestly, would I mind a world where we went back to, if they had a hard salary cap and we went back to 2-year contracts for the player and then they can pick and choose whatever they want to do at that point on? Doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, I'm a sports fan. I don't mind player movement that much. When a good player leaves, yeah, I'm bummed. But I'm happy for, I mean, gosh, you know, we've all weathered this hundreds of times.
Yeah.
We can weather it a bit more and still dig the sport that we're watching.
Exactly. And again, this is all in abstract to what I'm talking about with Watson and Wilson. It is very much a nonlinear comparison. It's just what I was kind of looking at, trying to examine the history of how people and what you brought to my attention with that Atlantic article by Jemele Hill. Again, can't recommend it enough. Looking at how people have historically interpreted athletes when the business of the sport becomes forefront as opposed to their on-field career. And it is just a fascinating kind of examination of things. So, again, there's not a ton of direct comparisons to draw with Wilson and Watson, but when you look at them from a non-fan perspective, whether I think, you know, like I think Wilson is more the sole benefactor of anything he's doing than the rest of the league, whereas with Curt Flood, the league was the benefactor, right? Like players for decades to come were the benefactors of his sacrifice for his career. Wilson
within,
is
within 2 years.
Within 2 years. Yeah. Wilson's the sole benefactor of wherever he ends up, and this is a struggle over power and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not the same. It is a fascinating exploration, though, of when I liked the antithetical, the word antithetical that you used. That the really like at the core of what the NFL is and MLB is and all of these things, the principles that like the oil that keeps the engine going feels antithetical to the principles of the game.
Totally. I mean, you've got to be very, I mean, you don't get to that place by deciding I'm a go along, get along kind of person.
Yeah.
You just don't. You don't become a quarterback for lacking confidence that you know what exactly should happen. That doesn't mean that you do. It means that you think like that. And that you, because you think like that, that is in part what is in your toolkit, you know, to be successful
and it's your
at
right.
that level.
And it's your right as a player.
And they all
person.
Come down to it, to a core, this core truth about wanting control of your own work environment.
Right.
And if you get to that stage, I mean, again, do I think they should trade Wilson? No. Do I think he's the best thing they're going to find? Absolutely. I like the guy. But the fact is, him sniveling about his career or demanding a change in his career doesn't bother me for a moment.
Right.
Unless he were to go out there and just start dropping the football in front of other players and deciding I'm going to throw a game, you know, all right then. Yeah, get angry. But short of that, I can't imagine that even if he's grumpy when you go into game one, he's going to be Russell Wilson.
Exactly.
For better or worse.
That's how I feel looking at Watson in Houston.
Yeah.
Again, a different situation. Seattle isn't dysfunctional. Houston is dysfunctional. But, like, it's people look at him and fans there and outside are like, oh, he's quitting on the team. Why is it his job to save this team that keeps stuffing its head in the ground like an ostrich? Is that how ostriches sleep, Mike? We need to look at that in our next interview. That needs to be my next.
We're absolutely going to go down that ostrich hole if we can. All right. Stacey, we will talk to you on Monday. Hopefully, a whole bunch more news breaks out over the weekend. And who knows? Maybe we'll talk about a new Seahawks quarterback.
No, we don't have to talk about that.
Mike. All right, Stacey, I'll see you later.
Bye.
Coming up, our final thoughts of the, not just the day, of the entire week, right after the break.
Near you.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, time for our last data dump before we head out for on our long, well, it's not really a long weekend, an average weekend, but it's going to be long for those of you who are up skiing because you're going to have an epic weekend. You're going to be exhausted come Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Frank, what do you got going on?
You know, I left my house in a state of disarray. Not, I didn't, but my wife. For some reason, my wife got it into her head that she was going to clear out my daughter's American Girl dolls. My daughter has 5 of them with mass quantities of accessories. And if you're not familiar with American Girl dolls, right?
Oh, yeah.
These and Sarah had 5 and a whole bunch of
Which
stuff.
Which means you have $60,000 in outfits for them.
You know what I can tell you is we found out that of the, I guess she actually has 6, and of the 6, 5 of the dolls have been discontinued. So they are highly collectible.
Here's how you pay for a semester of college.
That's right. One of them is worth $650 right now.
Good Lord.
So anyway, my wife had all the dolls spread out in the living room, and she was putting the different accessories, appropriate accessories, with each doll. That's what I left behind. And she was happy. She was happy. So I'm happy, right?
That's true.
I would have been terrified. One of my biggest phobias is dolls. If I was if I walked downstairs at my home and somebody had a bunch of dolls laid all over the place, I would just immediately leave without question. Dolls creep me out.
One time watching Chucky one too many times.
Yes,
for you,
apparently, yes, 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 yes. That movie traumatized me as a child. Well, what's on my mind?
Yeah.
Can I guess?
Yeah, now I know.
Yeah, well, yeah, the dolls thing. I had something really funny happen to me today. We've been having a lot of delayed openings at Alpental with a lot of the avalanche control, so I've been in contact with Ski Patrol a lot. I get a call today down at the bottom. I answer the phone. I go, hey, Shane, bottom of Armstrong Express. And the Ski Patroller says to me, oh, is this Shane Cobain? And I was really taken back for a second, and I wanted to be like, well, no, it's not him, but I actually know him, actually. And it was just another weird experience, just being on the hill and having radio just sneak its way back into my life completely unannounced for no reason. But it was that happened
great.
To be today, and it was kind of funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
Shane would love that.
Oh, yeah. I told him about it. He thought
good,
it was funny.
Good. How about you?
What's on my mind? Well, I guess what's on my mind is, I think it's going to be a big and pivotal weekend for me for reasons I will state later, but I am particularly lucky to be in the position I'm in right now. It hasn't felt like much of a lucky last 12 months. In fact, it's felt like an excruciatingly unlucky one, but it feels like things are turning around a little bit. So I'm actually kind of excited and nervous about this weekend, but I'm not going to say anything about it until Monday. But if you're asking what's on my mind, that's on my mind. It's just not full disclosure. Not yet, but it will soon will be. I'll let everyone know.
Yeah, we're going to be sitting in
superstition here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, folks, thank you again for joining us for another week of Cairo Nights. We will be back with you on Monday.
And when you're in doubt, and when you're in danger, take a look all around, and I'll be there. I'm sorry, but I'm just thinking of the right words to say. I promise. I know they don't sound the way I planned them to be. But if you wait around a while, I'll make you fall for me. I promise you I will.
and tender. These words just come out.